Hi, I am Ting Ng, and this is the Parents in Tech Podcast. Welcome to Season 2, where we interview dads who are technology company leaders based in Southeast Asia. After hearing from mums in Season 1, now it's time to speak to dads who are raising kids while striving in their careers. Let's find out the stories, challenges, and advice they have for us. In this episode, we speak to Leonard, Product Manager of Trust and Safety at TikTok. Leonard has more than a decade of product management experience at Yahoo, Singtel, BBC, and most recently, GovTech. He is a strong believer in making use of analytics for strategy and design. In his free time, Leonard spends his time gaming and scouring the internet for infinite tidbits and the occasional kernel of wisdom. Leonard is a father of two, a son aged 11 and a daughter aged 2.5 years old. Hey Leonard, welcome to the Parents in Tech Show. To begin with, can you tell us a bit more about your family?
Sure. I have a family of four. Me, my wife, son, which is 11 years old, which is family five, and young daughter of 2.5 years old.
Nice. So how did you meet your wife?
I first met my wife, oh God, this is so long ago, about 14 to 15 years ago. We were both product managers in the same company. Okay. So we are both product managers in Yahoo. We subsequently left to different companies, but eventually somewhere along the way, we got together.
Very nice. And when did the talk about having children, the plans for that, when did that come into place?
So I think my case was a bit unusual. So my first kid was actually from my wife's first marriage. I entered into a family unit to begin with. So I think it was a bit more different. I had to spend the first few years trying to work together with the new family unit to get the son to acknowledge me as well and to sort of like build that family bond. Then naturally, of course, once the bond is created, it was quite a natural conversation with my wife to actually have a second daughter because I myself is an only child. So I understand that there's a certain, I would say, loneliness, but there's some advantages for being an only child and lonely child. So I think having a sibling for my son is a good thing.
Yeah, thanks so much for sharing that, opening up about that, Leonard. Maybe can you share a bit more about what were some of the challenges and maybe even reservations you had? I know it's quite a while back, probably a decade or more so, but your thoughts into entering a family already.
So I think one of the few, I would say, common notions about it is that there's some stigma around it. Mm. But I think it's something that is just a notion. And one of the things that I had to overcome was to think about what were the opinions of others. I think after a while, you realize that the opinions don't really matter. What matters is what you think about yourself as well as what the family thinks about you. Mm. I think that was quickly overcome. And by spending time with my son, or spending a lot of time with my son, I practically made a lot of effort to try to meet him on a daily basis, build that modern relationship. Yep. And pretty soon, it became a pretty strong and close bond to the point that I had to stay over at my wife's place until the kids sleeps. Then I would return home every day until we actually got together. I think that also proves something about a family unit is like who you actually stay with and who you spend the time with, and it may not be just bonded by blood.
I 100% agree with that. A lot of times there's this idea that blood relations are important, but I agree that love, family, it's about that commitment, unwavering commitment in your case of making that happen. Out of curiosity, how old was your son when, I guess, you first met him, and what were the interactions like at that point?
I mentioned like me and my wife are like friends to begin with. Yep, so yep. I already knew my son when he was born. Mm. When we talk about like actually spending a lot of time with him, it was around the 1.5 to 2 year mark. That was when I made the choice to go and spend more time with them as a family unit, to go out as a family unit, as opposed to going out with just my wife.
Got it. Okay, that's wonderful. And you said 14 years ago, you and your wife were PMs at Yahoo.
Yes.
14 years ago, the tech world was completely different from the tech world as we know today. So maybe let's start with product management. What was product management like 14 years ago and what is it like today?
Sure. I think I was also lucky in a sense that I got into Yahoo because it was still one of the, I guess you can say, starting tech companies in a sense. And product management itself was sort of a role that was very foreign. So when I first joined, in fact, to be honest, when I joined as a web programmer, a front-end web programmer, I had this opportunity to become a product manager and say, okay, yeah, why not? Let's just try this. At the point of time, it was a pivot between product management and UX designer, interestingly, which are now like the two more popular roles now. So I decided that product management was the way to go because it was more of taking control of a product and trying to set, grow it. I think one of the things that are a bit different from then to now is that there are a lot more tools, there's a lot more structure in place about setting roadmaps, setting KPIs, setting metrics, trying to measure everything. In the past, or at least within the Asia region, it was less structured. It was more of product with me. How do I grow it in terms of users, in terms of revenue, and trying to sort of like fumble my way around. And there wasn't a lot of guidance. I mean, we did have one or two US PMs, which were a bit more solid. They sort of taught us like, okay, you might want to look at this kind of metrics. But there wasn't an easy to Google way of how to be a PM.
There was no Stack Overflow at the time, I guess.
Stack Overflow. There was no GitHub. There was some CI/CD, but it wasn't like now what we had.
Wow, wow. So I'm sure over the past 14 years, you've seen a lot of the change, contributed to the change, and that's exciting. That's very interesting, right? So Leonard, maybe share with us where you're at in your career now. What excites you? What are you looking forward to?
Sure. So I'm currently now still being a PM, more towards the web mobile applications. Previously was PM with the open government products, where I was trying to develop certain products for the citizens to improve government efficiencies. But recently, I just left the company. I'm going to TikTok. And I'm going to a space that that sort of motivates and interests me. So I'm going to the trust and safety area. I believe, also partially because I'm also a parent, the social media world is a good but dangerous world. We need to make it safer, hopefully. And I hope to contribute in that region. And I also believe with, especially like the metaverse and so on is coming, I believe more emphasis will be focused on trust and safety for the next generation.
Got it. Trust and safety, and you talked about how the inspiration or the motivation came from being a parent. So let's shift gears back. Tell me about the relationship of technology with your kids, especially for your son, 11 years old. This is when I'm sure he's familiar and used to screens as part of home-based learning and everything. Talk to me a bit more about that.
Sure. So I feel that the kids these days are very adaptable. If you give them a smart device, any smart device, they will naturally know how to use it. To the extent that my TV, unfortunately, is not a touch screen and they want to touch it, that's common. But I think we do give our kid quite a free rein in terms of the devices he uses. We do say that, okay, you cannot do certain things. We allow him to watch YouTube, for example, but we do occasionally monitor to ensure that the things that he watches aren't too adult in nature.
Yep.
Or a better way of saying it. Generally, as long as he does well in his grades, we allow him to play the Nintendo Switch, we allow him to look at YouTube videos or listen to music on Spotify and whatever. But on the condition that he still focuses on his studies, and if his studies do ever slip, then we'll remove some things. Of course, when it comes to exam periods, then we also remove that.
Yep.
But I think the interesting thing from that is that once he started playing games and so on, then he got more interested in coding. We try to develop him in there. We send him to coding classes. There's playgrounds on iPad, which we let him to do. And he seems to do well more in math, I guess partially also because of all the exposure in these codings and so on. So I think there's some benefits to it in exposing your kids to tech.
Yeah,
just not too much.
Yeah, definitely. But it sounds like so far you have adopted quite a loose, in a good way, approach where you don't restrict, you don't set very strict boundaries. And it sounds like your son is pretty good with that. I mean, have you found situations where you have to step in, you have to intervene?
Yeah, I mean, there are times where you would overwatch. Like we said, that you can only watch 1 hour and then we come home and be like, hey, why are you still on the iPad? Aren't you supposed to start at like 9? You're supposed to sleep tomorrow morning and so on.
Yep.
Then we sort of do a short imposement, like, okay, for the rest of the week, no more iPad.
Right.
Hopefully you remember it. And most of the time, he does remember it for a while and then he forgets, as kids do, and then you just reimpose it. As long as it doesn't affect him too much, we are fine with it.
Got it. And I guess, are you applying the same principle to your daughter? Because 2.5 is also when she's starting to develop her vocabulary, her language, and starting to figure out what screens are and how attractive they can be.
I have to say, unfortunately, I'm not quite sure if it's a good thing or bad thing. She is slightly addicted to it. I mean, like, she watches it during meal times. And that's when she gets to watch it.
Right.
Or especially in doing this work and home environment where me and my wife has to work and have to do these meetings, and she'll be out at the door crying her lungs out. Then we have to, okay, here, your phone, 10-20 minutes, hopefully this keeps you quiet so that we can finish our meeting.
Yep.
But we do realize that in a sense, for, and I also have to say that the YouTube quality of videos or the videos in, or the apps in general, from say, I don't know, 8 years ago to now, is vastly different. We realize that she has actually picked up a lot of words. She learned a lot of social norms from the video, even video teacher. So like occasionally we'll be like, you need to go and take a dump in the toilet. And she knows that she has to go and sit there. She knows that there's a toilet paper. She can follow through the action and motions, although she doesn't actually poops. And she learns that from the videos. Interesting to know that you actually learn a lot of stuff from a lot of social norms, especially in this day and age where a lot of kids are at home, from the video.
Wow, it sounds like there's some utility to the entertainment over there.
Yeah, I hope. From there, we try to restrict the kinds of videos as well, the more beneficial videos.
For sure, for sure. So, Leonard, your daughter, she's at home now. Does she go to, I guess it's not infant care, but childcare, playgroup? How are you thinking about that?
We initially sent her there for a while, but unfortunately, she keeps getting sick. And while we are working from home, it was difficult to manage it. So we have stopped sending her for the last about 3 to 4 months. We are hoping that once she hits 3, her immunity builds up and then we will try to resend her back to nursery one.
Got it. But then who takes care of her now, given that both, I guess you and your wife, are work from home?
Unfortunately, and well, thankfully in the Singaporean context, the mothers are available. So my mother is taking care of her. Previously, the mother was taking care of her. So it's sort of like it turns.
Nice. Do you guys have domestic help?
Yes, we do. I mean, we had a period of time where we didn't.
How was that like?
Very busy. A lot of household chores to do, a lot of cleaning to be done. So I try to do most of the household chores where I can in the day before the workday starts, somewhere in between during lunchtime. But I think we found that the time-effort trade-off wasn't worthwhile. So we decided, okay, now that restrictions are a bit more loose, we got in a new helper.
Nice, that's great. I mean, I myself also am seeing the benefit of one, so also in the process of getting one, hopefully we'll come in soon to get that help. Got it. So Leonard, let's dial back, say 2.5 years back, right, when your daughter came into this world. Tell me about the day that she was born. What was it like? What were the emotions? Just bring us back to that moment.
I recall I was in the operating theatre. My wife was having a C-section, so I just stood there, waited, then suddenly there's a crying of a baby, and the baby is there beside me. Yeah, better word to say, I guess it's a magical moment again, of sort, to have a new member of the family. I was happy, and then I guess the next concern will be, how's my wife? How's she doing?
Yeah.
How are you feeling? He's like, oh yeah, I can't feel anything because of the anesthetics. I'm like, okay, cool. Yeah. Cool for you. How's the baby? The baby's good. Hold the baby a while, and then you have to figure out what's next then.
Yes, exactly. So what were the thoughts of what's next, right? Because I also remember the baby is so fragile. It's such a wonderful moment, but it's also such a confusing moment. So what was it like, whether even at hospital, going back home, the first few days, the first few weeks? Was it tough?
I think it was not that tough for me. It was more tough for my wife. I was just sleeping in the bed beside, the hospital. So far beside my wife's bed. But I think a lot of things that went through my mind was about the logistics of having a new family member, unfortunately. So I guess once the magical moment passed, the next thing is the practical moment of like, what am I going to do? So like, for example, I had to send my kid to school daily.
Right.
So I had to figure a way to tell my mother-in-law, okay, this is how you're going to send. What time is it? Just do it for one day. You're going to sleep with my mother-in-law because your school is nearer to there, and so on. And then just shuttling back and forth to whatever my wife needs. If my wife needs her devices, a new set of clothes, a charger, or whatever not, I'll just like run back home, then go back and stay with my wife. And that was like for the first 2-3 days.
Wow.
She got discharged by the 4th day, and then it was a matter of beforehand coming back home to try to sort out the home to ensure that baby can come back to a home that has everything that the baby needs.
Yep.
I think a disadvantage is that the gap was so huge that you have to restart everything, and everything that you had, you'll be like,
can't
you everything away? And now suddenly you need to rebuy everything, so we have to like rebuy a lot of stuff.
Yeah. I think it's true, right? The role of the dad often is really to orchestrate all of things because the mom is recovering. But perhaps what is one or two things that you felt was most helpful in supporting your wife postpartum?
I think one is just ensuring that all the logistics is done so that she doesn't need to worry about it. That's number one. And number two, at least in my case, was to ensure that life still goes on for the rest of the family members, especially my son. So that she doesn't have to worry for my son. And what she has to do is just to sit down and rest. And when it's time to breastfeed the kid, to breastfeed the kid.
Yeah, got it. I think that's so true. Just helping her to take her mind off all the 101 things that need to get done, but at the same time, so that she could just be present and really focus on taking care of the newborn. So I guess going through that journey, 2.5, and I guess also even for your eldest son, 11 years, what's one of the most surprising things about being a dad that you didn't expect?
I would say the patience has grown tremendously.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, with a kid, and the kid often brings out the worst in you, and being able to contain it and like, okay, gotta chill.
Yeah.
Sort of brings or takes across to the rest of your life. In work, you have to be more chill about things, to be more tolerant about things.
Mm.
You realize that there's bigger things in life that sometimes this may not be the angle, what is the angle, and you need to refocus on that. I think that was one of the big things that I took away, being a lot more tolerant and patient.
Yeah.
And learning to let go in terms of problems and troubles.
So you got to tell us a story. Maybe it can be a recent one, it can be a more distant one, but tell me about a time when your kids made you so frustrated, so angry, and how you went about managing that.
So like I did mention that my kid occasionally is, I mean, they are young, they think a lot. And when they think a lot, they're in their own world, and you often call to them and they don't respond.
Mm.
So I think there are multiple times, especially in the morning, because we take a school bus.
Mm.
If the school bus, if he misses the school bus, I have to send him down to school. And it's no fun for me because the entire journey is about 30 to 40 minutes.
Oh, wow. Okay. Okay.
Yeah. So I often have to like, come on, eat faster. Come on, change faster. Come on, wear your shoes. And so on. Then after a while, I realized that it's for him and not for me. So after a while, I have to tell him life lessons like, you know, these kind of things, what you're doing, is it for me or for you? I say, it's for me. I say, okay, now that you know it's for you, if you miss a bus, and you go late to school, is it for me or for you? It says, it's for me. So, can you be more on time? And he started to be more attentive, I would say, at least in the morning.
Mm.
For a while.
Nice. Well, I guess the for a while part is completely understandable. They are kids, and I guess this drill, rinse and repeat is necessary. But I think the part that I really like is you asking the question. It's not like you're imposing on it, because that can sometimes just be the natural reflex action, but helping him to think through and rationalize it, that's so interesting. So on that topic, right, parenting advice, parenting tips, do you get your source from anywhere, or are you more like, I'll figure it and kind of figure it out myself?
I think it's more of the second. I'll try to figure it, or I'll try to figure it with my wife, and we discuss about how we're going to tackle certain things, how do we think we can help our kid change some habits and so on.
Mm.
But I think part of it is also learn unconditionally through just life lessons. A lot of stuff is like life lessons. Like I realize that most of the times we think of kids as kids, but kids are just young adults, and once they reach a certain age, I would say maybe 5 or 6, and they can understand, rationalizing things to them sort of works better. And it's the same thing like rationalizing to a human, an adult.
Yeah.
It's just, and I realized that if you can explain something simply to the kid, it will work with the adult. So in the process of trying to explain things to him, I'm also learning how to simplify my communication styles to the rest of the people that I do and work to.
True. The benefits of being a parent transfer to the workplace, making things clear, making sure there's no ambiguity. That's so nice. Since you mentioned also about discussing things with your wife, could you perhaps share a time when you realized that both of you had different parenting styles? What was the difference, and how did you go about resolving that?
I see. So I guess for me, when I grew up, I had more freedom. So my mom would let me just do whatever I want, go wherever I want. So I believe in a high level of independence, that I'm like, okay, if you want to go and get something, just take the money and go and buy that. You don't need me to go with you. You don't need me to go with you to the toilet and so on. And my wife has a bit of the opposite, where it's more protected. So she wants to ensure that the dangers of the world do not harm the kid. For example, because she knows that he's often imaginating and out in his own world, that maybe crossing the road is a bit more dangerous, or going to certain places by himself, and him not realizing what the environment like would be more dangerous. So he will want an adult or accompany my son.
Mm.
Sometimes we disagree on things. So I think we try to give and take, and we see what's the risk factor of it. If it's like crossing the road, sure, okay, I will let him try to cross, and then I will nudge him if he doesn't watch the road. But if it's something like going to buy food from the store, I'm like, no, just let him go and buy food from the store. Like, for example, like one of the recent things that we talked about was because my kid has to go to take the school bus at 5:30 in the morning. 6 in the morning.
Okay.
And it's very quiet in the void deck. So my wife was saying that in the future, how about we just get someone to go down with him always? I'm like, no. He can go down by himself now. Let's continue it so that he doesn't move backwards.
Yep. Yeah,
you need to give him the trust that you tell him that, you know, you don't go in and live with strangers, don't stand outside of the void deck where, you know, if people throw stuff, you'll hit your head. You should let him, if he does it, let him do it. And I think my wife then agreed with me on that, but we sort of like compromised it out. Okay, I will still sort of bring him down, but I'll let him like go walk there and then go on the bus by himself kind of situation.
Nice.
Yeah, I guess it's about compromise in the end.
Exactly. I think the open conversation, the compromise, but also I like the part about how conscious you are about building character through the small things. The small act like walking out of the house, going to the bus. I think sometimes we as adults take for granted that it's almost like a non-event, but I think things like these and making being intentional about it to show that you trust your son, I think that's wonderful.
So I think on that note, there was something recent that I also thought about. I think it adds on to that point where I think every small action sort of builds up character and their independence. So like recently when we were going out, I passed him an umbrella and we actually had to use the umbrella. Then he was like, I don't know how to open the umbrella. Then I'm like, wait, have you not opened the umbrella in your entire life? He said, yeah, okay, let's learn how to open the umbrella now. You press that button. Which button? That button.
Wow.
So after the first time around and then teaching him how to close the umbrella, when he needed to open again, do you not open the umbrella now? He said, yeah, okay, open it yourself and like settle yourself.
Thanks for sharing that. That is just, I mean, I feel it's so magical. It's such a small thing that once again, right, just goes down to what things that we sometimes assume, but teachable moments is always so present. Earlier, you also mentioned about how early your son has to wake to catch the school bus. What does your weekday schedule look like? 6 a.m. and it sounds like you have to wake up to get him ready. Tell me a bit more about how a typical day of your life looks like.
Sure. So typically, I'll wake up around 5:30.
Wow. Okay.
I wake up a bit earlier first because I wanted to use the bathroom first before he uses the bathroom. So I would then wake him up. He will be changing. I will just ensure that the lunch boxes are packed and the breakfast is made. While I do have a helper, I still choose to do that because I think these are the small things I can do for my kid. And this is the morning I choose to spend with my kid.
Yeah.
Because the rest of the day, I may not have the time to spend, or at least in the afternoon, I don't have the time to spend.
Yep.
And then I send him to down for the school bus. Typically, by the time I'm back up in at home, it'll be about 6:30, so 1 hour has passed. I try to go back to sleep at times, if I can. Else, I would typically be waking up around 7:45 to 8.
Yep.
And that's when my younger daughter wakes up and wants to drink milk. But I don't want to make the milk and then like pass it to her. Then from there, when we have to go back to the office, then I'll typically just change and leave for the office. Otherwise, when I'm working from home, it will be going out with my wife and sometimes bringing my daughter along for breakfast. Because I think that's one of the benefits of working from home. You get to spend more time with your family. So I guess it's a good and bad, depending on the trade-off of where you are. Start work, and then I try to end the day around 5:30 to 6. In between, of course, there's lunch, and me and my wife try to make time to go out for lunches because I think that's
nice.
It's rare that we get a chance to spend so much time together. Yes. And thankfully, we don't annoy each other either. So we enjoy the company. But then the day ends around 5:30 to 6. Try to squeeze in some exercise, have dinner, bring the kids out. We could just go maybe at the typical coffee places like Toastbox or Yakun. And it's really just to spend the time as a family, have a chat with the son to see how's his day like, how's things going. For the daughter to just munch on something, I guess you can say that. We'll go back, we'll try to put the kids to sleep by 9:30 to 10, or sometimes until 10:30. And then we do sleep procrastination, where we set the devices knowing that we should be sleeping because we don't have 8 hours of sleep, but we sleep procrastinate until maybe 11:30, and then the cycle rinses and repeats itself for the weekdays.
Got it. Well, not too bad. So at least you get about 6 hours of sleep. Not the ideal 7 to 8, but I guess nothing like a good way to wind down on Netflix or on the devices. Thanks for sharing that, Leonard. And I think one thing that I really appreciate, it's the part about you taking the effort to make breakfast. It's such a small thing. Once again, it's something you can easily outsource, but even that, I'm just encouraged, and it almost serves as a reminder that it's these small things that you create the moments and you create what's special between you and your children. I would definitely consider doing that.
Yeah, when your kid is older, you can try that.
Yeah, got it. Well, Leonard, maybe tell me a bit more about the biggest challenge that you face right now as, say, a dad in tech, right? On one hand, you have your career ambitions. On the other hand, you have a family that you're building. What is perhaps one of the biggest challenges that you face?
I think, interestingly enough, the challenge that I had is no longer really a challenge. Okay, so maybe I'll explain it and then we'll get there.
Yep.
So I think, yeah, what I say is right. So as you progress further in your career, you will probably want to hit higher, like maybe a head of product or chief product officer, and then you juggle more responsibilities, and then you have to try to juggle the responsibilities at work as well as at home. So I sort of recently come to terms that, you know, hey, product management is one of the few rare jobs where you can still be an individual contributor at a very high level. That means you can still go up to a principal product manager and be a very individual contributor to a company and not have that responsibility. Because I think for me, I decided that the whole family commitment is important enough that I think that instead of heading towards a more managerial role, I think I want to head towards a more individual contributor role and into an area that I like more. So I think that trade-off or that challenge that I used to have was sort of lessened, especially with the coming of the second kid. I guess kids make you feel different.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and you will give the world for it. And I think I've come to a stage where me and my wife are more focused on like what can we do to get to a stage where we are comfortable and okay with where we are in the career-wise, but yet be able to devote enough time to the family and also to build up the family in terms of spending time with them, building up assets, building up for retirement and so on.
Yeah. So it sounds like that was like a period of journey of self-realization where you started to figure out what your career ambitions are and how they fit that with the newfound feelings of being a parent, especially with your second child, which means more responsibility. But it's nice to hear that you have sort of also found a balance and have seen a path where you feel like you don't have to give up your career ambitions or you don't have to sacrifice your family, but you're able to achieve both. On that note, right, for dads, for those who are younger parents in tech who are thinking about doing the same, what kind of advice would you have for them?
I think boys have two things, like what do you want in your career? And I think one of the things that I personally felt was important was learning as well as being challenged. So if you look at my history, I actually jumped in various different industries to learn about different stuff, although the product management skills sort of can be carried over.
Yep.
And I think what helped me transition there was also about, if you know what you want, I would like to be challenged, I would like to try to learn a lot more stuff, does that match up to where you want to go? So if I look at it, going to a managerial position, people manager and so on, it may not lead me there because while I'm learning different skills, I'm not learning the product management skills, I'm not doing the fun bits of product management, but I'm doing people management. And I think that, I guess, say light a light bulb and say that, okay, maybe I want to go down the individual contributor role. And I think that role will also give me more bandwidth to spend time with my family. I think knowing what you want at work and knowing what you want in life in general,
yes,
is a good thing to know. Interesting conversation with a younger product specialist recently. So he asked, how can I be a better product specialist? So I asked him, like, so do you want to be a product specialist in 5 years or 10 years? He said, no. So I said, then where do you want to go? And what do you want to be? He said, hopefully I can be a product manager one day, because that's where I want to be. And I said, okay, cool. I want to be a product manager. Do you want to be a product manager in 15 to 20 years' time? He said, no. Then I said, then what do you want to be? I don't know, maybe ideally not working. Then that's your end goal. While you are working towards being a better product specialist, being a better product manager, just have to remember your end goal is that you would like to not work, and then you might want to start planning now, like how do you want to get to that not work, and if in between choices will lead you to there.
That's so fascinating. It's almost like an onion. So often we only go back and peel through one or two layers, but I think what you did was just really getting to the core of it, like what do you truly, truly want, and then working backwards from there. Oh,
I guess in a way, being a product manager helps because the product managers typically have to go and try to find what's the root of the problem that you have to solve.
Yeah.
So I think that part, again, like I said, work and life sort of intertwine.
That's wonderful, that whole cross of that skills and capabilities. So Leonard, to wrap up our conversation for today, if there's one lesson you have learned as a parent in tech, what would that be?
Tech is very fast evolving. Kids are also very fast evolving. You have to just adapt. In tech, you have to adapt to new changes in frameworks, in skill sets, in how you deal with stuff. Same for kids, like every stage of your life, every stage of their life, they have different problems and different skills that you need to teach them, different problems you need to solve. Everybody will have some imposter syndrome in a way. Don't worry about it, just power through it.
I love that. That imposter syndrome is real, but let's dare to own it and power through it. Cool. So if our listeners would love to connect with you, Leonard, how can they best do so?
You can connect with me on LinkedIn. I think you can easily search for me, Leonard Lim. There's very few of them.
Got it. And we will include your LinkedIn profile link in the show notes. Well, thank you so much for joining us on Parents in Tech today. It's such a joy to talk to you.
No worries. Thanks for talking to me too.
Thanks for listening to the Parents in Tech podcast with me, your host, Tingen. We hope you were inspired on how to raise kids and build companies. to catch up on earlier episodes or stay updated with upcoming ones, head over to www.parents.fm to join our community of parents in tech. There, you can also drop me a question, idea, feedback, or suggestion. Once again, the website is www.parents.fm. That's all for this episode, folks. See you next time.